Succession, number 28413, Reel 2.
Mr. Sowler, Reel 2. Well, we were talking about your work at Head Rights. Mm. Was that the only job that you were doing with that company whilst you were there?
Yes, and it looked as though I'd be on it till I was 95, sort of thing. So, fortunately, ICI sent a letter saying, "We have now opened the labs. Would you like a job?" I couldn't wait.
Well, what year was this?
This would be December 1939. I just beat the control of labour. And I went to ICI at a magnificent salary of £55 per annum. Working in the labs, I worked in the labs at Billingham for a very short space of time. And then I went to a house they'd converted in Hartburn at Stockton. I enjoyed it there, doing all sorts of jobs. And it was called Elmwood. There were one or two very severe winters. I remember having to push my bike along the street and then get into a rut at the end of the road on the main road because there was no one to clear the snow. And you rode along the rut until something was coming and you had to get off and let the vehicle pass. And it was very chilly. I remember one night coming out from work, in a blackout of course, and suddenly I found I'd stopped, but I was sat upright on my bike. I'd run into a snowdrift.
What kind of work were you doing in the labs?
Oh, various things like distilling alcohols, jobs like that. I enjoyed it.
Now, what was the aim of that work? What was it intended for?
I don't know what the final intention was, myself, to be quite honest. I say I was a bit cagey like that.
Well, it's a huge complex, I mean, yes. A really huge company.
Well, this was a research side, you see. So they were fairly cagey as to, you knew you a little bit sort of thing, but you were never sure what was the final thing.
Can we come back now to the beginning of the war again? Did you have an air raid shelter?
No.
Was there one for the street or
no.
Was a community shelter?
Nothing, no, we never bothered. Very much a sort of...
You issued with gas masks?
Yes, issued with a gas mask.
What did it look like and how did it function?
A little thing in a square box that you carried about for no particular reason in my mind. Never found any trouble in the blackout. There was never any problems.
I mean, the blackout was pretty, certainly in winter, it would be pretty dark, black nights.
It was, but you know, somehow you got used to it.
No street lighting, of course.
No street lighting, you got used to it. That was the point. It's strange that it never seemed to bother you.
And you talked about one of the anti-bomb things was to put sticking strips across windows.
Yeah.
But how was the blackout maintained in the house? What did you use for blacking out the windows?
Just curtains, that's all. Thick curtains. That was nothing else.
And you'd have wardens going around to see whether there was any light.
Oh, yes. Yeah, put that light out. Yes. And it would be... Well, of course, we had air barrage balloons. Nearest one to us was probably about 200 or 300 yards away.
That must have been an interesting spectacle for a young lad of 16 or thereabouts. See a barrage balloon being maintained and you worked at the end of the street kind of thing?
I remember one day when there was a lot of electrical activity, you know, in the atmosphere. And I saw 20 balloons come down, burst into flames and come down.
What were they protecting?
ICI, mainly. Do you want me, Mary?
You're talking about the balloons. How many did you say came down? 20, I think you said.
Must have been at least 20, yes. Like they just suddenly a flash, as they were hit by electrical discharge somewhere. And down they came. Well, of course, when you consider a balloon has probably 8,000 feet of cable. The one that came down near us one night caused havoc. The cable stretched across the Bishopton Road, along the school, across the main Durham Road, down our street, over the roofs of the houses on our street, and across towards the station and pull down a signal on the railway. And of course it wouldn't be very nice for the men having to get ladders out trying to cut the cable where it went across the roofs. It was quite a hectic night.
It would be quite dangerous, these flaming apparitions coming down onto your album or whatever.
I suppose it could be. I never thought of it like that. Yes.
Did you, in those early months of the war, did you suffer from a great deal of air activity? Enemy air activity, I'm talking about?
No, the first was the odd plane that came, followed the Coastal Command planes into Thornaby and shot the aerodrome up and disappeared. That we no siren, we just saw the... We could see out of my window the flames in the far distance. Well, it was just a reflection of the flames, really. And then there was nothing for a long time. And really, on Stockton, all that you got was odd bombs. You know, a string would come across three or four, causing havoc. But nothing really serious. We had one string that came across Northolt Street, killed a chappie about 300 yards away from us. Because I know my father was called out to try and to stop the gas escaping in Northolt Street. There was some in Pine Street at Norton. Mary, my wife, was fortunate. She was in a house in Norton Avenue where, without any warning, no sirens at all, a bomb dropped and removed the house next door to where she was. Fortunately, she was uninjured.
Were the air defences around ICI Stockton Middlesbrough pretty strong?
Yes, we had.
It was a vital area.
Yes, we had a lot of anti-aircraft guns. They made quite a noise when they fired over your house. Although they were over a mile away, I think they were about 4.5s. They were big. Later on, they got the Z guns, which were more or less a rocket thing, which I think were mainly just to put a barrage up rather than to try and hit anything specific. I mean, the field down near Boughbridge towards Middlesbrough had, I think, 72 of these guns stuck in the field. Made quite a bang when they all went off. And, of course, around all the roads around ICI were the smoke generators to pump out smoke.
And that was to cover the works if there was
Yes, any. Yes. But one of the biggest problems, of course, was the fact that when there was a danger of a real air raid, they used to blow down anything that was under high pressure, for obvious reasons. There was only one snag to that. They made ammonia, which required nitrogen and hydrogen, and they also filled hydrogen cylinders for the balloons. So when it came to blow down things, it's a chemical fact that all gases cool down as they expand, with the exception of hydrogen. So they'd blow down the plant where the hydrogen was being produced, and the gas would catch fire. So you'd have a nice big flaming torch going up into the sky.
So at the time of a raid, these gas containers on the works had to have the gas removed, in effect, in case of being hit. Was that the idea?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yes, the thing is, if there was any danger of that, there was. They did one time. The biggest trouble was one day, or one night, should I say, they hit one of the main water mains into the works, and that was probably the biggest trouble they ever caused. I had one or two very funny things while I was working outside at Stockton, Hartburn. One day we ran out of liquid nitrogen. Well, liquid nitrogen is at what, about minus 270, it's very low. And they said, would I go to Billingham and pick up another container of liquid nitrogen? They were in a copper thermos flask type thing, but it was circular. And it was probably about 15 inches across, but it was inside a wooden case. And sticking out of this wooden case was the pipe, which was copper again, the copper pipe. And so off I went. It was very heavy. Collected the nitrogen, went back to get a bus back to Stockton, And of course, the slightest wobble and a bit of it would spout out and there'd be a puff of smoke. Conductress wouldn't let me on the first bus. I'm not having you on that, she said. With that, you can get the next bus. Next bus came, got on that, but nobody would sit near me because of just occasionally these little puff as some of the liquid nitrogen wobbled a bit and skirted out of the top. However, got it back all right, no problem. Eventually, though, I went to work at Billingham. Didn't like it, really. ICII didn't agree at all, I'm afraid. That's what it amounted to. They reckon it was a good firm to work for, but I didn't like it. So that was when I decided it was time I joined the army.
Well, right, we'll come to that. Searchlights, were they quite prevalent in the area? Guns and balloons?
A fair number of searchlights, yes.
I think you were telling me that one of the kind of curiosities of the local people was to stand out and actually watch these raiders and raids going on rather than sheltering.
Oh yes, I mean, because we were on double British summertime and people used to stand out at the back of the houses and in the back street and they'd be talking till after 11 o'clock at night, you know, because I remember watching one night a rear gunner trying to shoot down the beam of the searchlight. There must have been tracer bullets. You'd see them coming down the actual beam of the searchlight, and then they lost velocity, and instead of carrying straight on down the beam, they just fell away. Somebody would probably have a hole in the roof.
Did you ever see any enemy planes shot down? Or?
No. There was plenty of activity, but never hit anything.
As part of your works, duties at the time, did you have to do fire watching?
No, because I after I joined the ARP, I changed over to the Home Guard.
Well, we'll come to that shortly then, because that would be the next the next thing to talk about.
Yes.
Were households issued with defensive materials for incendiaries and this kind of thing?
No.
You didn't have the fire pump and the whatever called it?
No. Nothing.
But rationing, that would start obviously very quickly. How did that work out?
Never seemed to affect us, really. No, I know, you know, it's amazing how people adapted. I mean, never worried about chocolate or. There always seemed to be enough. But you weren't wasteful. He made sure he didn't waste anything.
So, did you feel, therefore, that the rations were sufficient for a healthy diet?
Oh, yes.
That you were getting?
Mm-hmm. Never had any problem.
Oh, the black market. Did you have experience of the black market?
None at all. The only thing I ever heard of was somebody found something behind a hedge and they carefully took it home. When they unwrapped it, they found it was pork, but it was covered in maggots, so they had to quickly take it back. But that's the only story I ever heard. I think everybody tried to play the game.
I should have asked you when we're talking about blackout and so forth. How about, you mentioned riding your cycle, which you would do in the dark. How did you find your way? Did you have some kind of lighting on it?
Just a normal. Of course, you had to partially screen your headlight.
These were the little slits, which I believe the traffic had as well.
Oh, yes.
And you didn't find any problem there, because some areas found there were accidents, of course, because people, drivers, couldn't see so very well.
No.
In the dark.
Never had any problem at all. No.
Civilian passenger buses and that, I recall that some had these gas trailers or something behind them to keep them moving or something?
No, I never had that at all, no.
You didn't have anything of those?
Stockton had a bit of a shortage of buses, and they had some from London and Glasgow at one time, running in the town, and from the Yorkshire Woolen District, but they were only there for a short time, and then they went back. The funniest thing of the lot, it had to be seen to be believed. Of course, there was very little transport, and buses, when they were going from the works, were packed. If there was room to get your feet on the platform at the back of the bus, because there were open platforms in those days, you were on. And on the bank leading into Norton, off Billingham Bottoms, the bus would gradually get slower and slower. I could overtake it quite easily on the bike, push bike. And I've seen men drop off that platform and start pushing at the back of the bus. Well, that's a sight that needs to be seen.
Presumably train travel will be quite the same again, with packed conditions.
Fairly, but not as bad as that. It was worse, I found it worse after the war than during the war. No, I don't think I had much trouble there.
Now, the first disaster that hit the country, 1940, early 40, May 40, was Dunkirk. What are your memories of that? I know you weren't there, obviously, but as a civilian.
Mm-hmm. No, well,
what effects did it have? And
well, the thing is, we knew nothing about it. All we knew was that the holidays were being cancelled. Because what would it be, Whitsun or something like that? We were due to go, well, myself and another lad, were due to go on bikes up to the Lake District. So we went. We cut the holiday short, of course, because of the amount of time. We went up to Keswick, pushed the bikes over Stayed Pass, down to Wastwater, back down to Kendal, and back home in about 3 days. And we knew nothing at all about it. The only thing I ever noticed was, about this time, probably a day or two later, there was units going through Stockton from north to south direction nearly all day, heading south.
And military units?
Yes. And also, around this time, I used to do a lot of cycling, you see. I mean, I kept myself fit by going out every night, practically. And going around Hutton Rudby and all these areas around East Cleveland. And one night, every road was packed with buses, all painted khaki. You went down any of the roads, and there they were, all lined up, one behind the other. Next night, they'd all gone.
And this was the Dunkirk time.
Another funny thing that happened was, when I say we went around Dunkirk town, we went on this trip around cycling, we passed a field near Tea Bay. And the field was full of fighter aircraft, all parked. Why? Don't know. We, on this same trip, after we'd been round Wastwater, I think it was, we cycled up this place, and suddenly we found we were quite high up, you know, we'd cycled to quite a height. We were on it must have been a runway, because instead of being the normal road, it was about 5 lanes wide and went about a mile, dead straight. Why? No idea. I say, the trouble is, in wartime, you don't ask questions because you don't get answers.
I presume that would be out the range of German bombers.
Yes,
so
I would have thought so.
Congregate your aircraft there and probably fly them to operational areas.
Yes.
You know, by shuttling them over.
Yes.
So in effect, that road had been widened to accommodate incoming aircraft.
It looked like a landing strip without any doubt. Yes.
Did you see any of the Dunkirk soldiers coming in or arriving home?
No.
They had a very, very short leave, most of them.
No, never saw a thing. No.
What about men who were, you know, young men in the street around you going off to war? Did you see what was happening there? Families having to send their loved ones away?
No, never saw a thing. I mean, as far as I know, I was the only one around us that went.
The mood of Dunkirk within, I mean, obviously it would strike you at some time that there'd been this military disaster, let's face it, it wasn't a victory. Were you able to feel that the country was taking it in its stride, or was it just, again, something that just didn't register with you?
Didn't register, we were never going to lose, so what did it matter? That was the attitude.
Now, you said that you joined the Home Guard. When, what date would this be?
Oh, let me think. It would be probably late 1941. And my father was in the Home Guard at the gasworks, so I joined as well. See, it had one advantage. You could do a patrol along the beside the railway, and you could see the goods trains and that coming along late at night.
So your passion for trains was still with you?
Oh, very much so. It was.
So what was the process of joining? How did you go about joining the Home Guard?
I don't remember, really. I suppose I just asked if I could join that and drop the ARP, and that was it.
Was the unit given a title, a number of any kind to identify it?
I suppose it must have done, but it was the gasworks one, I know that. And you had to wander around the gasworks, make sure everything was all right. And
there were gasworkers that, in effect, was in with,
yes,
with the unit.
Mm.
So what, platoon size or company size?
I'm not sure, to be quite honest. Platoon, I should think, at the most.
What did they issue you with?
A rifle, a uniform, forage cap, boots, of course, and gaiters. Nothing else I can think of.
Was it a Lee Enfield rifle or some other?
I don't think so. I think it was a Ross, to be quite honest.
Canadian rifle.
I actually fired 5 rounds on the range with that.
Was that the only 5 you're allowed to fire?
Yes.
So you did your training, and was it a basic army training that you were doing?
No, not really. It was very limited.
Well, what form did it take?
I can't remember, to be perfectly honest. Not much, I can assure you. We used to go out on schemes, you know, crawling about in the dark and things like that. But nothing too energetic by the sound of things.
Was it, did it have a Dunlop infantry cap badge?
I couldn't tell you.
And you haven't got any memories of your home?
No.
Were you in very long?
Not really. No, about a year or so. And then I joined the army, you see.
What were your parents' feelings about you joining the army?
They never seemed to mention it one way or the other. I seemed to lead a very life of my own on that respect.
And what date was it you joined?
Well, I went down. It must have been, it was funny this, went down, it must have been about May. And I said, I'd like to join the Air Force. And they said, you can't join the Air Force, you're in the Home Guard. You'll have to join the Army. Oh, I thought, that's not fair. So I went to see my MP, who was Harold Macmillan, of all people. And he brought it up, and they said, oh, you're very sorry, but we're not making exceptions for you. If you want to volunteer, you go in the Army. I thought, all right, fair enough, Army it is. Went down to Middlesbrough, it'd be June 1942. Said, I want to join the Army. What about signals? Yes. Fair enough. And then another snag came up. I was in a reserved occupation. So anyway, they sorted it out between ICI, who said they'd release me, and they said, righto, we'll call you up, we'll send you the information. And in due course it came to say that I had to report on the 20th of August 1942.
Had you had a medical?
Yes.
And what kind of medical was it? Was it a pretty thorough one?
Well, fairly thorough. Yes. See, ICI wouldn't release me, they said, until I had a medical. And they, Army said they wouldn't give me a medical until ICI released me. I don't know how they sorted it out in the end.
As a volunteer, did you have to make the oath to the King and on the Bible?
Oh, yes.
And did you get your shilling for...
I can't remember that.
So why signals? Was it just that they came up with the idea? Or
yes.
they must have wanted some signals.
Yes, they must have done, but and I thought, join the army. All my friends had by this time gone into the forces, because I was the youngest. One, in fact, had gone to Russia with a convoy. And I thought, oh, we'll see somewhere exotic, you know. And it duly came, report to Catterick.
And what day did you report to Catterick?
20th of August 1942. Got the train to Richmond. At Richmond, there were trucks waiting to take us up to wherever we needed to go. And we went to Camel Lines at Catterick.
How were you received?
Very well. It was, I don't know how to describe it. There was a path leading up to Camel Lines, and sat at a table were two soldiers with lists in front of them, and you wandered up to them and you told them who you were, and they looked at the lists and they ticked you off, and it all had such a casual atmosphere. You felt as if you were saying, well, I don't think I'll bother, I'll go back home. But you were in.
So you got registered, got your paperwork, and
yes.
What was the next immediate thing that happened?
Went into Kemmel, big room, polished floor, and you were shown the kit you would get, which you soon got, how it should be laid out. You had three biscuits to lay on, three blankets, and all had to be put in a certain order, boots and everything was spread out. Floor, I say, was polished. It was very nice. And for 6 weeks, you did basic training.
What uniform did they actually issue you with?
Battle dress, plus the KD, denim boiler suit.
And presumably the shirts and underclothes.
Oh, yes, all the rest, yes. Two pairs of boots had to be put on your... The ones you weren't wearing had to be on your, laid out on your bed with the soles showing to make sure all the studs were in, etc., etc. It was...
How did they issue it to you? Were you lined up and...
Can't remember. You know, not a clue.
See, most of the time, they lined you up and they kind of looked at you and said, that's a size so-and-so.
It fitted anyway, that's pretty
good.
But
you can't remember that.
No.
I can't remember how that was done. So we issued you with your uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And this was again the first day that you arrived at Catterick, wasn't it?
Yes.
So what happened after you that you've got a pile of uniform, you're holding it there, where did you go then?
Well, you went back to where you were allocated one of these loads of biscuits and blankets and so on.
This was in the barrack room, wasn't it?
Yes.
What kind of barracks were they?
Very
big buildings or
very new, fairly big, and I say polished floor. Pooh, marvellous. Everybody got on very well together.
Were they brick-built, the barracks?
I don't think they were. I think they were concrete.
So they'd been pushed up, these particular ones, presumably?
I don't know. I think they'd been for boy trainees or something. You know, they were quite posh. They had showers in all sorts, you know. Marvellous.
How many men to a room?
About 30, I think. It was a big room.
And again, was your particular room or numbered people, whatever, was that given a title or a number?
We had one. I've got a photograph showing all the platoon together, but I'd have to find it. But we were all about the same age, I would say, as well. I mean, I was just 19. And we were put under a Sergeant Jewell of the DLI. He was a very nice... He was an old man. He must have been at least over 30. Because at 19, everybody over 30 is old, you know. And he was very nice.
And he was your instructor?
He was an instructor.
Chief instructor.
Yes.
Before we move to the training, can we... Since we've got you into the accommodation and the number of people in a room, you say it was highly polished.
Mm.
The beds would have to be put up in a certain way, were they?
There were just three biscuits you laid on the floor and you slept on them.
Oh, you're on the floor, you weren't on that
floor. Oh, no.
So when you got up on the morning, presumably you would have to...
But your biscuits were three... The three biscuits were about that square.
And one on top of the other.
Put them on top of the other. Then you had to put two blankets folded and the third blanket went round the other two to make a little tidy heap.
And did you have to put your kit out every morning?
Yes.
In the prescribed manner?
Oh, yes.
Now that you've got uniform, you've got boots, and spare uniform, spare boots, which would go out presumably. What about the other things they'd issued you with? I'm thinking in terms of what did they call them now?
Webbing, you mean?
Webbing.
Webbing, all that to be blankoed and clean, buckles polished.
Packs.
Yes, had to all be blankoed.
And what type of packs were you issued you with?
Small and large.
Because it's too near the end. Mm-hmm. I usually watch him. I've missed this one. Never mind.
Gaiters, of course.
I've just run that mug off. I haven't done so, but might do it now. Nothing.
Messed in.
And they were all laid out every morning in his
head. Oh, yes.
And were they inspected every morning?